listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee, a show about... Wait, repartee? Is that a word? Is that what I was supposed to say? The heck is repartee?
Quick, witty banter. We're going to have plenty of that today.
All right, you're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. Whatever. Hosted by Doug Paget, Brett Johnson, and Hunter Hawes.
I don't know about you, Hunter, but Doug and I have nailed that middle part of that intro. We got the timing perfect.
I was just about to say you nailed it today.
I finally did. Doug Paget's bit. Well, he gets more days than us, so he should be nailing that. You and I only get once a week, but I think I finally figured out the timing. But then, of course, I think we're going to have our Mr. Announcer guy probably record some new intros, so we'll switch that up and... I don't know if we're going to have a middle part anymore when we talk. We're still working through how we're going to do those, but looking forward to that. So just when we master that timing, we're going to switch everything up.
That's how it goes.
Exactly. Hey, by the way, at the Blue State Ball, which is coming up on Saturday, and order your tickets. Time is running out. Order am950radio.com at am950radio.com. Now, we do have tickets available at the door, but they're going to be much more expensive. Well, not much more expensive, but you will pay a little bit of a higher price. So order them now. Get them online. Guarantee your spot at the Blue State Ball, am950radio.com. Two great headliners, Tom Hartman and Sean Fugel, saying, we're trying to work on getting Tom Hartman on the repartee. That'd be good to get him on, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
Oh, Matt already had Sean Fugel saying on last week, we got to get Hartman on here before not too long, before the Blue State Ball. If you go to get those VIP tickets, you can meet with Tom and Sean Fugel, saying they're both very personable guys. Take some selfies with them. If you get those VIP tickets for $100 with the VIP this year starting at 5 o'clock. Another note about the Blue State Ball, as you heard Matt talk about the past couple of days, we have a VIP ticket giveaway going on right now. On our newsletter that comes out on Thursday, we are going to have a code word at the very bottom of that newsletter. All you got to do is email that code word to comment at am950radio.com. That's comment at am950radio.com. And you will be entered into a drawing to win Blue State Ball tickets. So comment at am950radio.com. We'll conduct that drawing on Friday. We'll announce that winner. Well, we'll at least email the person at noon on Friday, but we'll also announce it on air during our live and local shows at 3 and 4 o'clock. Now, if you're sitting there wondering, well, I don't get the newsletter. How do I get it? Just visit our website, am950radio.com. Very bottom of the page is where you can subscribe to the newsletter. There's no tricky forms. All you got to do is enter your email address on that sign-up form, and you're good to go. You'll be getting that newsletter with our code word. And also on that newsletter, lots of other great content as well. We post an interview of the week. We also post some Facebook and YouTube highlights, some great information about our advertisers. So check that out as well, not only to win those VIP tickets. And just don't rely on our giveaways. We're going to be giving away some general admission tickets, not today, but later in the week. Don't just rely on giveaways to get your tickets, because it's not like we're giving away 20 tickets every day or something crazy like that. It's going to be a very small amount. So guarantee your spot at the Blue State Ball, am950radio.com, where you can find your tickets. And Hunter, you are DJing the Blue State Ball. Any good song requests you've been getting so far?
I mean, Brad from Robbinsdale just gave me a whole list of them during Matt's show.
Yeah, you were chatting with him for a while. Was he running down like a whole list of CDs he was going through?
I got... Very specific notes.
Okay. Very good. Don't mess them up. You're the DJ.
Yeah,
man.
Yesterday I wasn't here, so I was downloading a lot of these. So I've been getting it ready. So I'm excited. It's going to be a lot of fun. Last year was a lot of fun. This year should be an even bigger celebration because of the amazing time we had defeating Trump and the Republicans and the blue wave that happened. We got to kick back and celebrate now.
Kick back and celebrate, and then get right back to work, of course, for 2020. But everyone who listens to AM 950 already knows
they
that.
They never stop working.
Never, never stop working. It's more of those infrequent voters that we got to get after that like to celebrate and think, oh, we're done. We don't need to do any more work. Hey, so in the news today, we got lots of news to cover, including an interview coming up during our next segment with Graham Wood of The Atlantic. He is their national reporter, and he recently wrote an article on Amy Klobuchar and her employee emotional abuse allegations. He has a unique perspective because not only is he a national writer for the Atlantic, but he's also a native Minnesotan as well. So we can kind of give us both that local and also national perspective on Klobuchar in terms of how those allegations are affecting your campaign. And also, is she going to be able to carve a niche in that Democratic primary? Because she is very much a center-left candidate as opposed to people like a Bernie Sanders or a Tulsi Gabbard who are running more on the progressive side on that party. So we're going to have that conversation with Graham Wood coming up in the next segment. We'll also take your calls on Klobuchar as well later on in the show. But before we get to that, I want to address the two big local stories that have happened today and also yesterday. We're only going to go through these briefly unless you want to talk about it. I mean, I'm willing to take the conversation wherever you want to take it, but Matt covered these extensively on his two shows. And, well, the first story is what happened with the Clay County Republican Party. Clay County, if you're not familiar, is basically just east of Fargo on the Minnesota-North Dakota border, so it's definitely in northwest Minnesota in CD7 Colin Peterson's district. Now, if you didn't hear it during Matt's show, their Facebook page, the Clay County Republican Party of Minnesota, put out a meme comparing Adolf Hitler and Bernie Sanders. And the absurdities, I'm not even going to go through the points they actually brought up in this meme, because the fact that you're even comparing Hitler and Bernie Sanders is just ridiculous on its face, when, of course, you consider that Bernie Sanders is actually, of course, Jewish himself. Adolf Hitler was not a socialist.
So, yeah, what was their claim with this?
I'm just almost speechless with these, but yeah, they're saying, I'll go through some of these points. I said I wouldn't, but I'll go through a few of these. They say they believe in state power that will fix America, both of them. They say they both proposed gun control. They both promise a political revolution. They both blame the rich for America's problems. Well, of course, in Hitler's case, Germany's problems. And they want a heavy military presence, which I don't even get.
Bernie? Bernie's about as anti-interventionist as they come.
That's why I'm trying to wrap my head around these points that they're even making.
Well, what they're I've seen this before. What they're trying to do is that the Nationalist Socialist Workers Party of Germany has the word socialist in
exactly,
it. So that they're trying to pin that, and it's the worst straw man argument. I mean, because it's Hitler specifically used the term socialist because he was so anti-Marxist and anti-socialist that he wanted to provide an alternative because the word was very popular at that time, but he wanted to create a right-wing alternative using the same language that leftists were using. But I mean, a similar concept to think about is Democratic Republic of Korea is not Democratic Korea Republic.
Yes.
It's these words are meaningless and used by dictators. They use popular terms to try and have broad appeal to their people. So it's an argument that with any bit of research, you will see that it's a total lie that these 7th District Republicans are using.
And you brought that up, talking about research and how you can debunk some of these myths. We're going to get into that in the last segment in how do you respond to trolls and people who just like to reply to political comments just for the sake of replying when they don't even want to have an actual, honest, intellectual conversation. Because you're onto something there where we can tackle these point by point, but ultimately, the person and the people that like this meme don't really care about our counterpoints. They don't care about the fact that, as you brought up, which is a great counter, the Democratic Republic of North Korea. There is nothing democratic about North Korea, obviously. So we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. But looking at some responses in terms of that meme that was posted by the Clay County Republican Party in Minnesota. Well, at least the Minnesota GOP has already condemned the post. They said the recent Facebook post by a volunteer with Clay County GOP is not appropriate, and we do not condone these actions or their sentiment. We have called on the local GOP unit to remove the post. We must, Republicans and Democrats alike, do better to dispel hate and come together as Americans. Very fine statement, but there is a lot of history of 7th District Republican Facebook pages in Minnesota posting all sorts of racist content. I just recently looked up two examples, and I know there's much more than this. The most blatant one is all the way back in 2015. Now, this wasn't posted by the Clay County Republican Party of Minnesota. It was actually posted by the 7th Congressional District Republican Facebook page in Minnesota, where basically at the time, the DFL was proposing to extend unemployment benefits to Iron Range workers who were laid off because of some mining issues up there in northeastern Minnesota. Now, what they ended up calling was saying, this was their post. I'm not going to quote it verbatim because there's some very racist language in it, but here's kind of the gist of it. They said the DFL wants to extend unemployment benefits to help with their self-created hashtag racist term problem. I won't use that actual racist term because it's actually very, very racist, but they had that on there. It was basically a slur against a certain ethnic group that they used. Then we also had 2017, this one very recent, the 7th Congressional District Republican Party of Minnesota Facebook page also compared Keith Ellison to, again, I'm not going to bring up the exact term because it's very racist, but they compared him to doing something in terms of a profession with goats, and they photoshopped his face on this meme. So all sorts of problems with that 7th Congressional District Republican Party in Minnesota. Looking at some other responses, again, as I said, the Min GOP at least condemned this, but they have a larger problem in terms of why this keeps happening in this area. Looking at some other responses in terms of the, who is this here? This is one of the Jewish Community Action of Minnesota. They said, earlier today, we saw this post from the Minnesota GOP in Clay County comparing Senator Bernie Sanders to Hitler. There are lots of reasons this is a ridiculous claim and even more reasons why it's deeply offensive and anti-Semitic. So there you go on what's happening with the seat with the Clay County Republican Party of Minnesota, which is in CD7 here in the state of Minnesota. Some other news to talk about. Just want to briefly follow up on what's been happening with this controversy of what happened with that gun rally at the state capitol on Sunday with Cal Barr, the state representative that seemingly called for violence against supporters of gun reform. We had a conversation with Kevin Featherly yesterday, Doug Padgett did, and myself, talking about and reacting to Barr's comments. Now, one of the things we were wondering was, are guns actually allowed at the state capitol? Kevin Featherly was actually able to follow up with us today, and apparently a state trooper just told him that the capitol is not a gun-free zone and that people with valid permits may carry there. Now, expanding on this, we are going to have a House of Representatives Public Safety Committee meeting coming up tomorrow, and this is going to be held at Hopkins High School. And this meeting is what Barr was kind of referring to in his speech on Sunday, because this meeting, we're going to see two primary laws debated. One of them is a background check law. The other one is red flag laws. What the red flag protective order law does is that this allows police or family members to petition a court to temporarily seize someone's guns if they are deemed a threat. And the strengthening background checks law would essentially have federally licensed gun dealers that are already required to run background checks before a sale, but that mandates does not extend to private sellers, and in Minnesota, criminal background checks are not required for the sale or transfer of guns between unlicensed parties. So basically, it's just strengthening background checks is kind of the gist of it. So that's what Barr was referring to and why his gun owners caucus was angry. But of course, his comments basically called for violence against supporters of gun reform. He, of course, has already said that we're misinterpreting his comments. But Hunter, I don't know if we have his audio because I want to replay something that we did during the 3 o'clock hour of the Matt Show just to show that he really wasn't being misinterpreted in what he was saying. No, he actually did call specifically for violence against people who support gun reform. Let's go ahead and play that audio now if we're ready, Hunter.
This body and members of the media have misunderstood the intent and meaning of my words. In my statement, the meaning of the word they refers to the two proposed bills and not actual people.
There you go. There's a lot of us in this room that have had enough, and it's time to start riding herd on the rest of these people that want to take your rights away from you. They will not go quietly into the good night. They need to be kicked to the curb and stomped on and run over a few times.
My statement was not in any way directed towards people. Instead, my comments were focused on the legislation that would restrict the rights of Minnesotans.
And it's time to start riding herd on the rest of them, rest of these people that want to take your rights away from you.
I do not condone violence. There was no intention of violence in my statement.
They need to be kicked to the curb and stomped on and run over a few times.
So we'll go ahead and get this shared to the AM 950 Facebook page and also the Twitter page, because that is a great comparison between the so-called apology that Barr was making versus his actual words that he had on Sunday. So one other note about this gun reform proposal that we were talking about that Barr was kind of railing against. So this meeting is going to be taking place, the meeting of the Public Safety Committee of the state legislature. I believe it's the State House. It's going to be tomorrow at Hopkins High School and the Little Theater, during which two gun reform bills are going to be heard. Now, what I find interesting about this, and this is actually what we found through a Twitter interaction with Kevin Featherly, a guy and I by the name of Brian Strausser on Twitter let us know that members of these gun rights groups have actually sent letters to the Hopkins School District requesting that they be allowed to carry guns into this meeting, because Hopkins High School is technically a gun-free zone. They actually wrote a letter to Hopkins High School asking that basically this rule that makes Hopkins a gun-free zone be lifted during this committee meeting, because for some reason these guys actually want to carry guns into this meeting of the Public Safety Committee. I don't know why you necessarily need to bring a gun in there. It just strikes me as it's only for intimidation, because it's a public meeting. There's really no reason why you need to carry a gun in there. I see no reason at all. Hey, let's run a quick phone call before we get to our commercial break. Let's go to Gary in Minneapolis. Hey there, Gary.
Well, you're talking about gun drill. That takes the government to regulate it to keep us safe from all these shootings. I mean, we still have, but it'd be a lot less like in Europe. But also, global warming, that takes government to tackle climate change or global warming. And they hate government. And the reason they hate government, Republicans, is because functioning government regulates the greed of the corporate elites. And that's their masters, the corporate elites, the billionaire class, and this big shot CEOs. And when the government functions, it protects our air, it protects our water from pollution, and it builds a prosperous middle class. And that's what they think of us, the great masses. They don't think much of us having anything decent.
All right. Thanks very much there, Gary. Got to move on to an interview in just a second, but look forward to seeing you at the Blue State Ball. By the way, saw a note there, Hunter. I was looking this up, too, before the show, because I had heard rumors that this committee meeting was going to be moved. And as of today, it looked like it had not, but looks like I got some news saying otherwise. And Hunter, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it looks like that committee meeting has been moved from Hopkins High School to Capitol Room 120 at 6:30 p.m. tomorrow night.
Yes, yep. A caller, this just happened, so that's why. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, but caller was in the know, and she said it's moved to the Capitol Room 120 tomorrow night at 6 p.m.
Yeah, so interesting that happened, but I just want to go back to, why did this gun owners caucus actually want to bring guns and open carry at a meeting at Hopkins High School? I guess it's a moot point now that it's going to be at the state capitol. But anyways, just to repeat that information one more time, that meeting of the Public Safety Committee of the House of Representatives, now not going to be at Hopkins High School again, going to be tomorrow night, 6:30 at Capitol Room 120. Hopefully we get some nice weather for that, because it seems like it snows every day. And going to the Capitol, if you're pretty much west of St. Paul, is just about impossible. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Coming up next, we're going to play back our conversation with Graham Wood, who wrote an article about Amy Klobuchar and her presidential run. Again, he has a unique perspective, not only as a national writer for The Atlantic, but also a native Minnesotan as well. We'll play that interview back next here on AM 950.
Hey, I'm Lori Fitz from Connections Radio Show, and I want you to join us for Repartee on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
Tap Taste and Treasure at Vinaigrette, where we have some warm seasonal recipes all ready to create dynamite meals. Our fig balsamic vinegar pairs perfectly with roasted Brussels sprouts or baked brie. And sweet potatoes are always a winner, but never more than when they're roasted with a drizzle of vinaigrette cinnamon or orange-fused extra virgin olive oil on top. Come in today for more custom-crafted food and cocktail recipes at Vinaigrette, 50th and Xerxes in Minneapolis, and 287 Water Street in downtown Excelsior. Online at vinaigrettemn.com.
With all the convenient big box stores that sell appliances, why do so many Minnesotans choose Warner Stellion? Check online to learn that Warner Stellion is a Minnesota family-owned business for over 60 years. Warner Stellion sells more brands than anyone else, and our passionate specialists are committed to impressing you so much that you'll refer us to everyone you know. That's our mission here at Warner Stellion. Ask around. Check us out online. And when it's your time to buy appliances, join over 300,000 Minnesota homeowners and choose the specialists, Warner Stellion.
Hi, this is Laura, and I want to tell you about my family's favorite thing. It's our wood stove. We bought it about 14 years ago from Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces. And see, the wood stove has actually paid for itself because we can keep the main area that we live in toasty warm with this great moist heat. But more important than saving money, it has actually improved our lives. Having a fire simplifies life. It provides comfort. It sort of takes the chill out of winter.
I'm Peter Solak. In 1977, I started Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, and I experienced the simple joy of warming myself by a fire. I also realized that the place and the way we embrace fire has evolved in a diversity of forms and styles. So at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, we have brought together the widest selection of our fireplace products and technical knowledge in the Twin Cities. Our mission is to use our knowledge to help you choose the design and function that is right for you and your home.
Visit Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces today and find the right fire for you.
Tom Hartman here, letting you know how you can save money with All Energy Solar. One of the myths about solar is that it's too expensive and you need lots of money down. The truth? Solar is available for little or no money down. And if you have a great site for solar, you might even save money right away on a monthly basis. So don't wait to switch. You'll see your investment pay off the sooner you switch to All Energy Solar. So start saving today and visit allenergysolar.com. Hey Minnesota, it's Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
So it's been a few days now since Amy Klobuchar announced her run for the presidency. She's been touring Iowa, New Hampshire, among other places. But one issue that's been dogging her early in the campaign has been the treatment of former staffers. Several former staffers have been making accusations against her that she had a very abusive treatment of them when they were working for her in different offices that Klobuchar has held from over the years. So how will this affect her during the general election campaign and also during the nomination process? Joining us to talk about that is Graham Wood. He is a writer for The Atlantic, and he recently wrote an article for The Atlantic titled "The Two Klobuchars," talking about those accusations. Graham, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, glad to have you with us. And as we were just talking about off air, you are a native Minnesotan as well. So you bring kind of a unique perspective of being a native Minnesotan and also someone who can provide more of a national perspective on Amy Klobuchar.
That's right. I was born in Crookston, Minnesota, and lived in Minnesota until I was seven. So it's not quite true to say that my political sensitivities and sensibilities were formed in Minnesota, but there is a mark of being a Minnesota native that never wears off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but I'm sure you still have family, friends that are probably still in the area as well.
Yeah.
So let's go to these accusations against Amy Klobuchar for people that maybe haven't been following this story very closely. What exactly are these accusations against Klobuchar? Are they rumors, formal complaints, or general comments that former employees have been making against her?
It started off a few weeks ago when BuzzFeed and Huffington Post both described a pattern of what I think we could safely call abuse of her staff. In part, it was just suggesting that she might have driven them too hard, that she might have said some things in the heat of the moment when she was dissatisfied with their performance. And then the New York Times added another story just last week, which pretty much just replicated those stories and said, yes, she's been pushing them not just too hard, but in a way that would demean any employee, any underling. And they didn't quite come out and say that this is something that would disqualify her as a candidate, but it did suggest that she might be flying off the handle a bit too much, and in a way that we wouldn't want someone with the finger on the nuclear button to act. So my piece writing about her in The Atlantic was to say, look, she might have a rage problem. It certainly seems like there's enough people who are coming forward that this is something we have to take seriously. But we should, of course, also try to look at this in the context of bosses behaving badly in politics since time immemorial, and perhaps also of women being taken to task for their misbehavior in ways that men would not.
Yeah, it is an interesting dynamic to bring up because, as you wrote in your article, lots of men over the years have also been accused of this same thing, and it really hasn't affected them very much in their political career. So do you think there's a bit of sexism that also could be in play with these accusations in Klobuchar and the fact that they do seem to have some traction as she's launched now her first national campaign?
Yeah, I think that's probably part of it. Now, we could just go down the list of Republican and Democratic politicians who have acted much, much worse than Amy Klobuchar is even being accused of acting. I mentioned LBJ. You know, LBJ, this is a guy who would call his aides to talk to him while he's on the toilet, just so that he could force them to, you know, smell his fumes. That's the kind of thing that we're up against when we look at the history of male politicians behaving badly. Amy Klobuchar is accused of throwing binders at subordinates, throwing phones at them, and being withering verbally when she's found them to be lacking in their jobs. So it's definitely not something that's new in politics to have a boss who is a terror to work for. And it's very difficult to find politicians who have really been held back in their careers because of that. And some of them, LBJ again would be a good example, seem actually to have been advanced in their careers acting this way. And when we look at Amy Klobuchar's the accusations against her, which again I find probably pretty credible, we should understand them in the context of that long history of politicians.
What's really interesting about this is that, you know, I've lived in Minnesota for most of my life, and I think most Minnesotans are kind of surprised by these accusations because her throwing binders, getting mad at employees, totally does not match her public persona because, as you wrote about and as we saw last fall during the Brett Kavanaugh hearing, she came through as very measured, very under control, and overall just very likable, especially when we go back to that exchange she had with Kavanaugh where they were talking about drinking. So it is an interesting dynamic that this public persona doesn't really seem to necessarily match her workplace persona.
There are people who have a public persona of a very crude public persona that matches their private persona. And I think LBJ, especially the reputation that he has now, is an example of that. But there are also many, many politicians who are remembered as being genial, amiable in public, and who nobody knew except for their staffers and except for the people who knew them in private life, what terrors they could be too. And one example of that I give in my article in The Atlantic is Joe Biden. I mean, Joe Biden, if you go to a Joe Biden campaign rally, if you see him meeting in public, you will see among the most charismatic, backslapping people you'd ever find. You couldn't imagine that there would be someone who thought, oh my goodness, this is someone who I would not want to cross, who is dangerous to get on the wrong side of. But that's Joe Biden, and everybody in Washington knows that. Everybody knows that Joe Biden has two sides to him. One a very happy-go-lucky, and the other one someone who will nurse a grudge and be really mean when it counts.
So I want to go back to something you were talking about, saying how different politicians have even kind of used this to their advantage to advance their careers. Could this actually be, in a way, I don't know if this is necessarily the best way to put it, but a political advantage if that's, quote-unquote, all opponents have on her so far, as opposed to if you look at some of the other Democratic candidates where Bernie Sanders is accused of being a crazy socialist, or Cory Booker has corporate ties, or Kamala Harris has her problems with criminal justice after serving in California. Could this somehow turn into an advantage, being that it's so far the only thing opponents really seem to have on her?
That's a very interesting question. I don't think that the Klobuchar campaign has leaked out these accusations, but there is an inoculation process that any candidate really has to go through, finding out what those weaknesses are and then road testing them, finding out how much it really matters for the campaign, for the public. Now, there's a possibility that this will turn out to be the worst anyone can find on Amy Klobuchar. In such early days, we don't know that. But if that's the case, then think about it this way. Amy Klobuchar goes on Saturday Night Live and throws a binder at someone. There's a big laugh, and suddenly she's the front runner.
Oh, that's actually really interesting. Yeah, I didn't even think of that. Yeah, if she were to do something like that, yeah, she could almost turn that into and kind of defuse the situation, similar to how Trump has done with so many issues that were supposedly supposed to dog him back in 2016. So
Exactly. If you embrace the flaws that the media have reported about you, then it at least suggests that you're aware of them, that you're someone who can take criticism, and it's often the politically, tactically, strategically smart thing to do.
So, taking a look at how these issues, these workplace issues and accusations, might play out during the campaign, is this something that you think other Democrats are likely to bring up during debates or as the nomination process heaps up? Or is it something that is more likely to be brought up should she actually be the Democratic nominee?
Well, I think it's going to be brought up, but it will probably not be brought up as eagerly as you might think, even by her primary or maybe eventually Republican opponents. And one reason for that is that, look, politicians in general, to decide to do this job, you have to have multiple sides to your personality. You have to be someone in private who you're not in public. And you have to have enemies. You have to make enemies as you go. And I wouldn't be surprised if any candidate, anyone who's been subjected to the stress of running for Senate over the presidency, has some very unflattering moments in his or her past. So it might be dangerous for some of the other candidates to be too eager to say that Amy Klobuchar has been unkind to her subordinates. Difficult to say how it's going to play out.
Do you think she's being viewed different nationally than she is here in Minnesota? Because I look at how Amy Klobuchar is viewed in Minnesota. She's been elected with at 60% or over 60% in just about every statewide election she's had, where really she's very good, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but she's good at playing the media and very skilled at putting through her narrative, where now she's running a national campaign and dealing with a media that she's not familiar with, and these accusations have kind of dogged her over the past few weeks. Do you think she's viewed different nationally as opposed to locally?
Well, let's be honest here. She's not viewed nationally at all, and she hasn't been until very recently. The name recognition that she has is still pretty low. Obviously, in Minnesota, it's going to be way, way higher. When you ask someone in Texas, what do you think of Amy Klobuchar, you have to explain everything about the history of Amy Klobuchar. So what we're observing right now is her debut onto that national stage, which we saw a preview of during the Kavanaugh hearings when she was, you know, on every news program. But now she's really being subject to scrutiny that she hasn't before. I don't think that there has been enough exposure so far for us to be able to say what voters think of her in states that are not Minnesota. So we've got a lot of time before we can figure out how it's all going to play.
And talking about that name recognition issue, how is she going to carve out a niche on the campaign? Because she definitely is more of a center-left candidate than some of the other candidates who are running, like a Bernie Sanders, who want to really take that left flank of the party. And you see other candidates as well embracing things like Medicare for All or the Green New Deal, where Klobuchar's kind of put those in different terms, where she's calling them aspirations instead of something she's trying to endorse. Is there really an appetite in the Democratic Party right now to try to endorse someone on the center left? And is there any room for her on that more center left part of the party as she launches her campaign?
Well, the trend that you're describing is one that we saw so intensely in the last election, which is movement away from the center and toward the extremes during primary season in particular. And I do believe that although that trend is real, the idea of a Bernie Sanders being a candidate was far-fetched in the last cycle, but turned out to be not as far-fetched as people thought. And then this cycle seems like a real possibility. But there's also a reaction to that. And I think Amy Klobuchar would be one of the main beneficiaries to that reaction. There's a sense that she represents a center that was eaten away at by the last election cycle and by the Trump presidency, and that she would restore sanity by being an example of a centrist candidate. It would have been normal in decades past when we had, shall we say, politically happier times. So on the one hand, trends are working against her. On the other hand, people don't like those trends, and she would be an example of a way to get back to those what felt like happier times.
Well, it's certainly going to be interesting as that nomination campaign heats up and we get closer towards debate season, which, hard to believe, is only a few months away. That's Graham Rood. He is a writer for The Atlantic, recently writing an article on Amy Klobuchar called The Two Klobuchars. Graham, thanks so much for joining us on the program today.
Thank you so much for having me.
952-946-6205. We'll get to that legislative update in just a second. Hunter was just itching to hear from Liz Olson in there, so I'm throwing him under the bus. But hey, I want to take one caller here on Amy Klobuchar before we move on to our next segment, and that is Jim in St. Louis Park. Hey there, Jim. What's on your mind?
I was wondering, I saw there's a letter to the editor, and it was signed by a whole bunch of people, including my mayor, Jake Spano, and Joe Radonovich, and all kinds of people who had worked for Amy Klobuchar that said that she was a great person to work for and helped their careers.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like I put that on Facebook, and like I didn't get any likes, and you know, or very many likes. And it's, why is that? You know, I don't know. It seems like that would be a strong response to all this.
Well, I think typically you always are going to have someone like that who does positively impact a lot of lives. I mean, I hate to bring up this analogy, and thanks so much for the call there, Jim, but I'm going to regret this comparison, but remember Brett Kavanaugh. He had that letter written from a bunch of women saying that they were treated wonderfully by him. Now, of course, Klobuchar is nowhere near Kavanaugh or anything like that, but you can always have those types of counterclaims where people always come back and write a letter signed by a whole bunch of people saying, well, I wasn't treated like that, because typically in that situation, you don't necessarily have, if you have an abusive boss or someone who's treating their employees negatively, it's typically not necessarily to every single employee, but it's something we're going to have to watch. And it is an issue that I think might continue during Klobuchar's campaign. But as I brought up during that interview, it could actually work in her favor, though, in this sense that if that's the worst thing her political opponents have on Klobuchar, I think her campaign's actually in pretty good shape, because if you look at the rest of the Democratic nominees, a lot of them have a lot more baggage than her. I mean, as we talked about, look at Kamala Harris and her controversy with criminal justice, being the Attorney General of California, or Bernie Sanders is still going to always have to deal with that word socialist. Cory Booker is going to have to deal with Wall Street ties. Tulsi Gabbard has to deal with her history on LGBTQ rights, and also with Assad over in Syria. So if that's the worst issue Klobuchar has and the worst baggage she has against her, I think her campaign's actually in pretty good shape. What are your thoughts on
that? Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, everyone's going to have something. Yeah, everyone's going to dig up dirt on each other.
Yeah, no one's going to run a perfect campaign and have no skeletons come out of the closet. Now, I'm not totally familiar with these claims, how much they've been vetted. Of course, they've been reported by lots of different national publications. But again, as I said, if that's the worst thing that comes out against her, I think her campaign is in pretty good shape.
And I think it's something you can spin into strength.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what we were talking about, too, in that interview, is that it makes you come across as a very strong boss.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's say Trump goes and criticizes her for being too tough a boss.
Yeah.
That's not going to work for Donald Trump in a general election.
Yeah, the only way he could twist that is a very sexist take, which he might do impulsively.
Yeah, and his supporters will, of course, go for that, but it's people that he's going to have to win in Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania that put him over the top. If you want to chime in on Klobuchar, give us a call, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Before we go do that, let's go to our legislative update for today with Liz Olson.
This is your daily legislative update on AM 950 with a member of the DFL House Leadership. Each day we'll check in with a member from the House Leadership to find out the latest of what's going on at the Capitol. This week we speak with House Majority Whip Liz Olson. One of the issues you've been working on for years, Representative Olson, has been addressing the issue of elder abuse. Just recently at the state legislature, there were some hearings where we had some very emotional stories from people who were affected by elder abuse with their relatives, family, and friends. Can you tell us what sorts of measures we're looking at taking in terms of addressing elder abuse?
Yeah, I mean, again, this was a topic that we thought going into session last year that we'd be able to get something done, but the Republican-controlled House just wasn't able to did not bring anything meaningful forward in this regard. So we're trying again. And when Governor Dayton was in office, and there was several Star Tribune articles in 2017 just highlighting how rampant the abuse was, he put together a consumer work group that had a number of organizations that are most directly on the front lines of this work, and they put forward a set of recommendations. Last year, we had that drafted as a bill. It didn't get a hearing in the Republican-controlled House, but this came back again this year with a even more, I think, better vetted version of this consumer protections bill, and so happy to see that it did get a hearing this week and moved out of the HHS policy committee, and so it'll continue to move and will continue to work. I mean, the stories are just gut-wrenching when these families come in and tell about the loved ones that they entrusted facilities, assisted living facilities in Minnesota to care for their loved ones and just did not get that care, and in time even had, you know, just really awful, unthinkable things happen. So I think this is something that everybody in Minnesota really wants us to do to make sure that we are licensing and regulating these assisted living facilities, and then giving consumer protections to the families if something does go wrong.
That was your daily legislative update on AM 950 with a member of the DFL House leadership. Each day at this time, we'll check in with a member of the House leadership to find out the latest of what's going on at the Capitol. This week, our conversation is with House Majority Whip Liz Olson.
Hello. If your taxes from years past are talking to you from the back of that drawer in your desk, it might be about time you answered the call by making a call to Moe's Tax Service in St. Paul.
Time to come out now.
They've been preparing tax returns and creating advisory-based relationships with their clients since 1971.
Kind of stuffy in here.
Problems with the IRS don't go away by ignoring them. Call Moe's Tax Service. That's M-O-H-S. They're on Ford Parkway in St. Paul. 612-721-2026. 721-2026.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Hunter Haas. Tonight, snow likely, cloudy with low around 4. Wednesday, cloudy with a high near 14. And Thursday, partly sunny with a high near 20. This week's EatLocalMinnesota.com Restaurant of the Week is The Great Wall. Just north of 50th and France in Edina, The Great Wall Restaurant has been providing a delicious taste of authentic Chinese cuisine since 1981. Find out more at EatLocalMinnesota.com.
Hello, this is Andrew Yang, Democratic candidate for president, and you're listening to Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
And there's a guy who'd like to challenge Amy Klobuchar for the Democratic nomination.
That's a guy who doesn't have any dirt right now.
That's a good point. I wish he would get more national attention in the media, because I really like his campaign.
Actually, there's good news on his front. He's got almost all the donations needed to appear at the debate. So he's been doing really well.
Yeah, he's just got to meet that polling requirement because, yeah, I know there's those two thresholds you have to meet.
It's only 1%, though.
It's only, okay.
Yeah, but you need 65,000 donations.
Yeah, they need to come from, isn't it all 50 states or like 30 states or something like
that? Yeah, there's a state requirement and individual donations.
What do you think of that requirement? On the surface, I kind of like what the DNC did there, because you can't just let anyone into a debate, but I think it's a low enough threshold where you can still let in some outsider type candidates.
Interesting, because right now Bernie's the only one who's made that. So
Bernie will be the only one at the debate. Now the DNC stacked it in Bernie's favor.
Yeah. Ooh, what a twist.
What a twist, yeah. An M. Night Shyamalan-like twist there, where now Bernie gets the favor treatment. Hey, let's go to Laura, who is from, of course, Food Freedom Radio, the host of that show, which you can hear Saturdays at 8 a.m. on AM 950. Hey, Laura, what are your thoughts on Amy?
Hey, yeah, well, I was getting myself charged up, but I also, since you brought up universal basic income with Yang, I would love to see a democracy where we're talking about ideas and policies and a little less drama. But I do think with this idea of A.B. Klobuchar being, and there's a word called witch, but the word I'm thinking of starts with the letter B instead. I'm not going to say it.
Yep.
But that type of thing has really deep, deep roots in sexism. It really does. And I think it can hurt Amy because she is the senator next door. And so when people throw that stuff at her, I think that can be damaging, but I also think it can be helpful too. And so, but one of the things that I would really like for progressives or us to try to figure out is how to be how to see all this in a lens of nonviolence, right? You know, because if someone throws a binder on the ground, that doesn't mean they're that witch word. That means they threw a binder on the ground. And, you know, there could be a lot of reasons, and they existed in a context, and it was interpreted in a context.
Yeah, I think you're right. And thanks so much for the call there, Laura. I got full phone line, so I want to make sure we run these before the show wraps up. But as she was talking about with that word that rhymes with witch, unfortunately, that is kind of what people use to describe tough bosses who are female, as opposed to male bosses who, as we were talking about in our interview with Graham during our last segment, it makes them look like tough guys. It shows strength, or it's much different if you're doing that as a female boss. So there's certainly sexism at play in that as well. Let's go to Randy in St. Cloud. He also has some thoughts on Klobuchar.
Well, I don't know. When I've had a male boss who's not very kind, the term is, that's used for those guys is, it rhymes with bass. But anyway, yeah, the drama, I agreed with the last caller, the drama about, is she crabby to people? And, you know, that's all that interpersonal rumor stuff. But if you look at Amy's policies, that's where I really think she just, she doesn't have her finger on the pulse of what's going on, at least in my world. This incrementalism, we're just going to improve ACA. We're just going to improve the Heritage Foundation, Mitt Romney health care bill. You know, we got to get past that. And, oh, we can't go too fast on the Green New Deal. That's just, oh, it's a pipe dream. It's an aspiration.
Yeah, she said no. Aspiration, right. Mm-hmm.
Right. It's not. It's got to have... We have to be bold and do something. Plus, she voted for Rubio's bill on the BDS, the banning BDS thing. It's like, that's our First Amendment, Amy. You're supposed to be a legal scholar. You are a prosecutor. Mm-hmm. That's trying to squelch our First Amendment right to protest. And I don't understand that. I couldn't believe she did that. So there's a whole lot that Amy doesn't do for me.
All right. Thanks so much for the call there, Randy. And I hope this is what happens during the debates, that we don't get bogged down in focusing on, was Amy Klobuchar a mean boss? No, I think it should be about policy, obviously, because she is going to be trying to carve out a niche in the party, as we talked about, which is different than how a lot of the other candidates for the Democratic nomination are running. She definitely is running towards more that center left, where it's going to be, let's make incremental progress, similar to, I hate to say it, almost like kind of what Hillary Clinton was saying, where we have to do what we can now. We can't move too fast, just to kind of repeat what Randy in St. Cloud was saying. And it's going to be interesting to see if there is a place for her in the party, especially on the debate stage, because I think she's going to be hit hard by a lot of these candidates. I'm not sure they're necessarily going to be focusing on that whole mean boss strategy when it comes to debate time. I think they're really going to be focusing on her policy issues. And I think if she picks up momentum in the polls, you're especially going to see Bernie Sanders and other candidates really go after her, saying that the time is now to deal with climate change. We can't have incremental progress anymore. We need the new Green Deal. Same with economic policies. I mean, I think eventually we're going to be on the verge of another 2008 type recession with some of these policies we're seeing from Donald Trump, where we're going to need financial reform and Wall Street reform, and incremental progress is not going to get the job done. And even though I'm still undecided in who I would vote for in the nomination, Bernie Sanders is definitely on the right side of those issues right now and saying, hey, we got to move quickly on those issues. And just to expand on one more point, I think it's good that we have a very large debate field, because we're going to get a chance to vet all of these candidates. If they have any weaknesses, it's going to be brought up during the nomination process. We're not going to find out and hopefully have any October surprises. We're going to be able to vet everyone and have a nice debate during a large campaign season, as to compared to 2016, where we had six debates and like four of them were held on a Saturday night, one of them against, like, I think, college football or Sunday night football. So I think this large nominating process is going to be a good thing, and it's going to give us a chance to see if Amy Klobuchar, Bernie Sanders, Cory Booker, if they're ready for primetime. Do you agree, Hunter?
Mm-hmm. And I think Amy Klobuchar is going to have success with her stances, and because she's sincere about her policies, where a lot of this field isn't. They picked up these policy positions because they're trendy.
Exactly. And that's why I'm only using Bernie Sanders as the guy who's running on that progressive flank, because I'm not going to name names, but as you just brought up, there are a lot of candidates who are kind of Johnny-come-latelys and moving to that progressive side of the issue, or progressive side of the aisle, just over the past few years or even the past few months, where I think, and this is another interesting aspect as we head into the nomination season, people are going to be looking for genuine candidates.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what I will always give Amy Klobuchar credit and respect, because you know where she's coming from. At least she's honest.
Mm-hmm. Which is interesting to have a center-left and very honest candidate, because I think the perception of Hillary Clinton was that even though she represented that center-left part of the party, a lot of people felt she came across as being very aloof, very insincere.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, let's move on to Mike in Forest Lake. Final phone call of the day. He has some thoughts there on Klobuchar. Hey, Mike, turn down your radio just so we don't get any of that nasty echo here on the airwaves. What's on your mind, though, Mike?
I was in a snowmobile crossing my path. Yeah, Amy Klobuchar is only out there to make herself look better in Minnesota. I don't think she has a chance in the national politics, because she doesn't paint with broad strokes. And, you know, you say that, you know, being critical of somebody being a bad boss, it means bad leadership. I don't know any good bosses that, you know, are tough. The good bosses aren't necessarily tough. They're fair and such. If you call somebody in the middle of the night and berate them and make them cry and stuff, that's because you're a weak person, nothing else. It doesn't matter whether you're male or female. It's just a weakness of character.
All right. Thanks so much for the call there, Mike. We're going to wrap up with phone calls for today. I'm not really quite sure where Mike was going, saying she's only trying to improve her standing in Minnesota. Where else could she go in Minnesota? She's already getting like 60% of the vote in every election.
Yeah, Amy Klobuchar is the most dominant politician in modern Minnesota history.
Yeah.
So that really doesn't make any sense. She doesn't need to score any points here.
Yeah, and I'm not quite sure where he's going with the mean boss angle, too, either saying that if you have a tough boss, that automatically makes you a mean boss. I'm not really sure I buy that, because I think that used a sports analogy that kind of fits into coaching as well, where you have good coaches who are a little bit more harsh on their players versus having more of that players type coach. It's all really just comes down to fitting your personality and being very genuine. Hey, one programming note before we leave the airwaves. You may have heard, of course, that Norman Goldman show has unfortunately ended. As you heard him say over the past few weeks or so, his show just wasn't making enough money, and it was his decision to end it. Basically, it came down to there just weren't enough AM 950s and stations like us around the country, and they weren't just able to get enough revenue to keep that show going. So instead, we have the Rick Unger Show, which you can hear now weekdays from 5 until 7, and I really encourage you to give him a listen. Listen the whole way through. He had a great discussion yesterday on socialism, because don't let him rub you the wrong way. Sometimes when I initially thought of that, well, he's just another corporate centrist type Democrat. But listen more. He makes a lot of really good points. Then some other quick programming notes. Bradcast with Brad Friedman now will be airing an hour earlier in the evening at 7 o'clock. And the David Pakman Show also airing an hour earlier now at 8 o'clock. And the Devil's Advocate now expanded to 3 hours, airing weeknights from 9 until midnight. Find the full schedule at am950radio.com. That's all the time we have for today on the Repartee. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. This is the end of our program, or the Departee. You can listen to our show anytime at am950radio.com or wherever you get your podcasts.